is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Uhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Of course, we know how callous, horrible those guys are. And the moment they have such window of opportunity to do more harm, they'll definitely, employ that tactic. So it's quite concerning.
That's Chidi Omiji, a security analyst, warning militaries in Africa to prepare now for terror groups to use drones for attacks. Details coming up. Also, a broader malaria vaccination campaign is being rolled out in Africa. And techies in Ghana aim to empower Africans to contribute to Wikipedia in their native languages. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Security experts in Africa are raising concerns about the growing use of drones by terrorist groups and the readiness of the government forces to match their sophistication. A report last week showed African terrorist groups are using global affiliations to acquire and modify drones for their own needs. Though the drones are not yet being used to launch attacks, analysts worry that in the long run, they could change the balance of power with governments. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The Institute for Security Studies report says while the global focus has been on the adaptation of unmanned area systems in Iraq, Syria, and other spots in the Middle East, drones are becoming part of the toolkit for violent actors across Africa. The report said African militant groups like Boko Haram, Islamic State West Africa Province, and Al-Shabaab are acquiring and modifying drones for their own purposes. It said terror groups use social media and messaging platforms to get the knowledge they need from groups like Al-Qaeda and Islamic State. The report suggested that the increasing affordability of the technology may be contributing to the growing trend. An analyst for Beacon Security in Nigeria, Kabiru Adamu, worries the drones will make terror groups more powerful.
It creates another layer of challenge for the already challenged security operations that are in that region. Now, even though that has more or less been restricted to locations around the Middle East and some parts of Asia, but we've also seen indications of that happening in the Lake Chad Basin. On several instances, we've had reports of field operations, especially military field operations, encountering unmanned aerial vehicles that are mainly for surveillance purposes. We are yet to pick up any report that indicates the arming of such unmanned aerial vehicles.
Terror groups often use drones for propaganda, intelligence gathering, and reconnaissance purposes. Last month, African Air Force chiefs met in Senegal and said the continent urgently needed to develop sophisticated defenses in response to the growing threat. But the report said African countries lack the capacity to address the problem. Adamu agrees.
It will shock you that we do not have any sanctioned or certified method for mitigating aerial attacks in the country using unmanned aerial vehicles at the moment. I think we're currently trying to develop our capacity for that. So it appears to me that the Nigerian military in particular is playing catch up in this area, that the armed groups are ahead.
Last year, Islamic State West Africa Province used drones to shoot propaganda videos showcasing its training camp. Also last year, the group's surveillance drones were spotted over the position of government forces shortly before fighters launched an attack. Experts say African nations need to develop domestic approaches before they start thinking about regional and continental response. Chidi Omeje is a security analyst. He says there's no time to waste.
Just like the report said, they are watching and learning. So it is a very serious development. It's something that the sub-region military groups should take particular interest in and to see how they can get around that and be on top of the situation. So, of course, we know how how callous, horrible those guys are. And the moment they have such window of opportunity to do more harm, they will definitely employ that tactic. So it's quite concerning.
Experts say Nigeria needs to lead the regional effort, but that the country itself lacks a coherent policy to combat armed groups' use of the drones. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
A border malaria vaccination campaign is being rolled out in Africa with more than 330,000 doses of the world's first WHO-recommended malaria vaccine, RTSS, arriving in Yaoundé, Cameroon last night. The delivery is the first to a country not previously involved in the malaria vaccine pilot program and signals the vaccination against malaria is being ramped up across Africa. In 2021, 247 million malaria cases were documented globally, which led to 619,000 deaths. 77% were children under age 5. The vast majority of malaria cases are in Africa. Dr. Ephraim Taklelamango, head of immunization at UNICEF, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam another 1.7 million doses of the RTSS vaccine are scheduled to arrive in four more African countries over the coming weeks.
This is going to be a game changer because we are moving to a larger scale up globally from the first pilot we had in three countries, namely Ghana, Malawi, and Kenya since 2019. So we have moved from the pilot stage where we have been able to prove the level of impact of the vaccine and the safety and efficacy of the vaccine and also the overall community level acceptance of the vaccine to now a larger program. You may recall some 4 months back, we had announced the allocation of about 18 million doses of malaria vaccine to 12 countries, since this were the limited number of vaccines we have at this very moment. From 2023 till 2025, which were supplied and going to continue to be supplied by GSK.
With climate change and droughts and floods, mainly floods this past year in parts of Africa, is this even more important now to get this vaccination out?
It is very important. At this very moment, we know that every minute a child under 5 years old dies of malaria. And out of these cases and the cases happening in malaria, we know that some 95% of these cases happen in the African continent. So it is very important that the African continent is prioritized and this malaria vaccine is rolled out broadly, depending on its availability and countries' readiness to be able to roll out this vaccine. And we have been allocating these vaccines based on the potential for highest impact. So our focus would be on a specific set of districts in these 12 countries who are currently allocated, who are seeing highest burden of disease and transmission of malaria.
Why is Cameroon getting the first shipment? They're kind of a newcomer to being part of the rollout, right?
Yes, so the larger rollout. So you may recall that we had allocated already the vaccine to about 12 countries, which is three countries who were already implementing the pilot program, which is Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi. But additional nine countries, that also includes Cameroon. And the list of those countries that were allocated were Burkina Faso, Liberia, Nigeria, and Sierra Leone, and Cameroon as well, and a few other additional countries.
What is RTSS exactly? How does it work? Do you have to do more than one administration of giving this vaccine so that the children and other people that get it have to come back?
Exactly. So for a child to be protected, along with provision of other prevention methods, we'll need to receive at least four doses and then continues on a monthly basis, depending on the country's schedule of vaccination.
Is it free for children and everybody else?
So currently the countries introducing the vaccine are going to be supported by Gavi, along with other partners such as WHO and ourselves, UNICEF, to be able to plan, implement, and also see and govern and administer the overall implementation of the vaccine rollout. Vaccines will be provided almost free, but countries are expected to be able to co-finance, but they are expected only to pay about 20 cents per dose, based on the Gavi allocation mechanism and based on the Gavi co-financing principles.
That's Dr. Ephraim Taklelamango, head of immunization at UNICEF. He was speaking to my colleague Carol Van Dam from New York today. Wikipedia is a widely accessed and essential source of knowledge, but top-ranked English Wikipedia, which has millions of pieces, while some significant languages commonly spoken in Africa have far less. A movement led by young Wikis or techies in Ghana aims to empower individuals to contribute to Wikipedia in their native languages, allowing volunteers to create and edit new entries. I caught up with Jory Darlington-Conorsi, a Wikipedia team head lead who was on a jog on one of the hottest days in Accra, Ghana.
Welcome to Africa 54.
Thank you.
You are focused on empowering the young people in Ghana. You do a lot of things for Wikimedia. Bring us up to speed. How is the tech community there that you lead to make sure that Africa is heard or Africa is on the map?
Running some mentorship programs, then also training programs to be able to train not only developers, but people who contribute to the technical infrastructure. We do have people from software engineering background, people from UI UX, people who only do quality assurance in terms of software testing at large, and people who are much more focused on localization. So localizing most of the Wikimedia projects into other languages for people to be able to also understand. Since there are people who are much more good with contributing to other projects at large, but they are not well vested when it comes to contributing to projects that are only in English, right? So we try to let them have some form of inclusivity in terms of they being able to contribute to it, then making most of our projects much more diverse.
A lot of these tech companies don't take in consideration inclusivity. I'm happy to hear that you guys are actually on the cutting edge of that spectrum, where you are trying to at least incorporate some languages when it comes to programming, when it comes to including some of these indigenous people into the tech field. How has that been like?
So we do have people that localize these kind of projects into local languages in Ghana, and not only in Ghana at large, but Africa at large. So we do have people contributing to Swahili Wikipedia, Akan, which is Cree Wikipedia, Yoruba Wikipedia, the Pidgin Wikipedia, both Ghana and Niger Pidgin Wikipedia, then also the Funalini language for Fofolda, and the language communities within Africa also grow at large. So there are people and mentors who normally come on board to be able to help people who let's say from these kind of local communities are well vested in terms of good language with regards to these kind of languages.
What drives young people across the continent, or what drives people in general, to be on Wikimedia?
People within the academia space get to be able to also use Wikipedia in education as well, in terms of helping or teaching their fellow students or even lecturers and professors using Wikipedia as a secondary aggregator, an aggregator of sources to be able to help researchers, learners to be able to also know how to be able to make good and authentic research in terms of helping their project, their thesis, and information that they normally seek on Wikipedia.
What does it take to be on Wikipedia?
Wikipedia is open for all. It's not limited to a certain group of people or people with a specific skill, because we make it much more diverse and open to everyone who wants to just contribute. So anyone can be able to create an account and contribute to Wikimedia, any of the Wikimedia projects, from Wikipedia to its other sister projects as well, such as Wikidata, Wikivoyage, which is much more of an information related to the places and cities as well. So once you are able to get in touch with these communities, it makes it much more easier to get some form of mentorship, to learn about the policies, the guidelines, and how best you can be able to also navigate your way in terms of contributing to the Wikimedia project at large.
You run this network of young wikis or young techies.
Yeah.
across the continent. What are some of the other projects that you are involved in?
Technical angle, which is helping people to develop tools, people to have a fair understanding of how best to contribute to Wikimedia technically in terms of the engineering aspects, creating tools, creating user scripts, creating bots, and also extensions and etc. Then aside that, I'm able to also provide technical support for most of the Wikimedia communities and also volunteers within the African region.
Jorissa, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, too.
That was Jorissa Darlington Kwarishi, Wikipedia team lead based in Accra, Ghana. He was speaking to VOA's Paul Indiho. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The start of Israel's pause in fighting due to be announced early Thursday, according to Qatar. An Israeli government statement said an extra day would be added beyond the initial four-day period to the pause for every additional 10 hostages Hamas releases. The Israeli pause will also allow for more humanitarian convoys to bring aid into Gaza, including fuel for humanitarian efforts. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed to bring back all of the hostages while reiterating to cabinet members that Israel's goal is to eliminate Hamas and to ensure the militant group can no longer threaten Israel. I talked to Linda Granstein, who is in Jerusalem earlier today, on the latest. So I guess the big news today is the pause in the fighting, and at least 50 Hamas hostages, women and children, will be released along with Palestinians held by Israel.
Yes, so it's supposed to begin Thursday morning, in other words, tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Israel time, with the first release of the group of the Israeli hostages. And then the fighting will be paused for 4 days. In addition, a large amount of humanitarian aid and fuel will be allowed to enter Gaza. And at some point during that 4 days, 150 Palestinian prisoners, men under the age of 19 and women, will also be freed, although there aren't as many details on that. In terms of the Israeli hostages, they will be the Hamas will hand them to the Red Cross. Then the Red Cross will then bring them to Israeli soldiers. Once they cross back into Israel, they will be taken to isolated medical facilities where they'll reunite with their families and, of course, have medical checks.
And President Biden welcomed the ceasefire deal. And so who was behind the deal?
Well, the deal, the negotiations, first of all, was several weeks, and it was a combination of Qatar, Egypt, and the United States. In fact, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu thanked President Biden for helping make the deal better than it had been originally, maybe in terms of numbers of hostages, or wasn't exactly clear what he meant. And, of course, the feeling in Israel is both hopeful, but also very nervous, and the fact that it's just 50 out of the 240 hostages.
Talk to us about the West Bank and about reports indicating Israeli settlers are increasing attacks in the West Bank.
Yes. Well, there has long been a lot of tension between at least some Israeli settlers and Palestinians. Some of the Israeli settlers are extremists. And, since the war began, there has definitely been an increase in both clashes with the Israeli army and Jewish settlers. And at least 8 Palestinians have been killed by Jewish settlers. So, and in some of these very small, there are some very poor, small farming communities of Palestinians, and they've actually left because they're so afraid of the Israeli settlers.
So where does the death toll stand right now on both sides?
So the Israeli death toll is about 1,200, most of whom were killed on that first day of fighting when Hamas came in and attacked all these different Israeli communities. In the actual fighting in Gaza, 68 Israeli soldiers have been killed. The death toll on the Palestinian side, the only figure we have is from the Hamas-run health ministry, which says says that more than 14,000 people have been killed and that two-thirds of them are women and children.
And the aid and the fuel situation in Gaza, will this hostage release thing maybe alleviate the burden on the Gaza citizens?
Yes. I mean, Israel has allowed in some aid, but it's been not enough. There's quite a bit of aid that the international community has sent that's sort of waiting to get into Gaza. And yes, that's the idea that a lot of that there would be an opening and a lot more food and water and fuel would also get in during these 4 days. That said, you know, United Nations officials say that their facilities, schools, and things like that are completely packed with more than nine times the amount that it was originally set up for. There's been widespread destruction in northern Gaza by the Israeli army. So I think it might alleviate some of it, but it won't provide any kind of a long-term solution for the population of Gaza.
So this Israeli-Hamas agreement to a temporary ceasefire for humanitarian purposes that includes a hostage release deal, how is it being taken where you are? How are people reacting to the news?
So I think it's kind of a mixed reaction. On one hand, the hostage families, you know, have gotten a tremendous amount of sympathy, and there are posters of the hostages all over Israel on benches and on billboards, and there are all these, you know, art installations. And so I think people are very sympathetic for these families and want their family members to be released, especially, you know, we're talking about 40 of the hostages are children. So this idea of children, some of whom are held without their parents, people are very sympathetic. At the same time, I think people are a bit concerned that it will mean that Israel will have to stop the war before they have dealt sort of a final blow to Hamas. There's concern that after 4 days, or perhaps if the ceasefire is extended 5 days, there will be a lot of pressure on Israel not to go back to the fighting. Israeli officials today say that they intend to go back to fighting, and that this war for them in Gaza has had two goals all along. The first is freedom for all of the hostages, and the second is making sure that Hamas can never provide a military threat the way that it did on October 7th.
Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem briefing us on the latest. Thank you for your input.
Thank you, Yehia.
Liberian president-elect Joseph Boakai's party is canceling all remaining victory celebrations after a speeding vehicle careened into a victory celebration by his supporters, killing three. Authorities say at least 17 others were injured. The crash late Monday took place hours after election officials formally declared Boakai the winner of last week's runoff presidential election. Incumbent President George Weah has already conceded defeat. Police made an arrest following the crash but withheld the name of the suspect pending an investigation. It was not immediately known whether the crash at the headquarters of the Unity Party in Monrovia was politically motivated and therefore an act of domestic terrorism. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Jumbe Hamza, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.